यदा
वै
जिग्रिक्षान्
डिजायरिंग
टू एंजॉय
पुरुषा
द लिविंग एंटिटी कार्त्स्नेयेन इन टोटल प्रकृते ऑफ मटीरियल नेचर पुनान् द मोड्स नवद्वारम् हैविंग नाइन गेट्स हस्ता हैंड्स आंग्री लेग्स सत्रा हेयर अमंता फीट हॉट साधु वेरी गुड इति थस ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रीला प्रभुपाद ट्रांसलेशन When the living entity wants to enjoy the modes of material nature in their totality, he prefers out of many bodily forms to accept that body which has nine gates, two hands and two legs. Thus, he prefers to become a human being or a demigod. Purport. This is a very nice explanation of how the spiritual being, the part and parcel of Krishna God, accepts a material body by virtue of his own desires. Accepting two hands, two legs and so on, the living entity fully enjoys the modes of material nature. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 7.27, Ichha dvesha samuthena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammohan sarge yanti parantapa. O scion of Bharata Arjuna, O conqueror of the four, all living entities are born into delusion, overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. Originally, the living entity is a spiritual being, but when he actually desires to enjoy this material world, he comes down. From this verse, we can understand that the living entity first accepts a body that is human in form, but gradually, due to his degraded activities, he falls into lower forms of life, into the animal, plant, and aquatic forms. By the gradual process of evolution, the living entity again attains the body of a human being, and is given another chance to get out of the process of transmigration. If he again misses his chance in the human form to understand his position, he is again placed in the cycle of birth and death in various types of bodies. The desire of the living entity to come into the material world is not very difficult to understand. Although one may be born in a family of Aryans, where there are restrictions against meat eating, intoxication, gambling and illicit sex, still, one may want to enjoy these forbidden things. There is always someone who wants to go to a prostitute for illicit sex or to a hotel to eat meat and drink wine. There is always someone who wants to gamble at nightclubs or enjoy so-called sports. All these propensities are already within the hearts of the living entities. But some living entities stop to enjoy these abominable activities and consequently fall down to a degraded platform. The more one desires a degraded life within his heart, the more he falls down to occupy different forms of abominable existences. This is the process of transmigration and evolution. A particular type of animal may have a strong tendency to enjoy one kind of sense enjoyment, but in the human form, one can enjoy all the senses. The human form has the facility to utilize all the senses for gratification. Unless one is properly trained, he becomes a victim of the modes of material nature as confirmed by Bhagavad Gita 3.27. Prakrite kriya manani, gune karmani sarvashaha, ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. As soon as one desires to enjoy his senses, he puts himself under the control of material energy, and automatically or mechanically is placed into the cycle of birth and death in various life forms. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtham Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamityam ददाति स्वपगान्तिकं मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयति गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदिनतारिणम् वांछा कल्प तनुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा easily all the class to the camera but I know this is the current situation we are doing because of the coronavirus thing. So we are seeing that in this particular chapter the talks between Narad Muni and Bhim Prachinabhari are continuing. Narad Muni, the eternal devotee of the Lord and the compassionate soul that he is extremely disturbed, or he feels extreme compassion when he sees the deplorable condition of Bhim Prachinabhari. So over the last few chapters, we have been understanding how Narad Muni, through the allegory of King Puranjana, has been trying to make King Prachinabhari understand the futility of all these karmic activities that King Prachinabhari was engaged in doing, the animal killing that he was doing in the names of Vedic sacrifices. So we can see he's engaged in that, and now King Prachinabhari has posed some question at the beginning of this chapter, which Narad Muni is explaining. He is giving answers to that question. So he is telling King Prachinabhari, because King Prachinabhari in the first verse of this chapter had posed a question that how is it that the living entity, like you have explained all this to me, but I am unable to understand because I am steeped in sense gratification and in all these activities of animal killing and Vedic sacrifices that I have been doing. So it is very difficult for people who are overly attached to fruitive activities to realize the purport of whatever you are speaking. So this is what he was explaining. And now in this particular verse, Narad Muni is further explaining how somebody gets the human form of life. The process of evolution is explained by Srila Prabhupada in this particular verse. So it first of all refutes the philosophy, like in some transcendental sects, they say that once you get a human form of life, you always stay in the human form of life and you keep transmigrating within the human form of life. You never fall down from the human form of life. This is the explanation that some transcendental sects give. But Srila Prabhupada is refuting that particular explanation completely. Prabhupada is saying that based on the desire and the karma that a person has done, he will definitely fall down. So he can fall down in the previous verses, so he can fall down into a two-legged animal or a four-legged animal or, you know, multi-legged animal like centipedes and all these types of insects Prabhupada is saying in the previous verse. So Prabhupada is explaining over here that the basic, like, you know, we go back down to that, you know, question which is always there amongst devotees, especially in ISKCON, that how come we came to this material world when we were serving Krishna so nicely in the spiritual world? And Prabhupada is explaining, and Narad Muni is also explaining, that when somebody wants to enjoy the modes of material nature, when the living entity becomes envious that why is Krishna alone enjoying, why is he the center of attraction, why can't people serve me? As soon as even that little bit of a desire comes in the living entity's heart, he immediately, Krishna makes facility for him to immediately come down. Krishna has created this material world where he has given facilities to the living entity to enjoy their senses, who have a desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. And Prabhupada is making one more point in the purport over here. Prabhupada is saying that the first time when the living entity comes from the spiritual world, he actually is given a form, a human form. So he is, Krishna is so merciful that he straight away doesn't cast someone into an animal form or an amphibian or aquatic or something like that. He is giving chances at every stage for a living entity to go back. And obviously we know that human form of life is the best situation which a living entity can have to go back to the spiritual world. So the first time when a living entity comes, Prabhupada is explaining that he actually is given a human form of life, wherein he can understand that the purpose of this life is to go back to Godhead, is to realize through devotional service the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and again reach back his abode. But when a living entity fails to do that, he fails to recognize the purpose of the form that has been given to him, he can then keep going down and down and down. And then he again goes into that cycle of evolution of 8.4 million species.
which Krishna explains to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. So, even in the human form of life, we see there are 400,000 types of human species. Now, when we say there are 400,000 types of human species, we might wonder that everybody looks the same. All human beings have either man, woman, child. They all have two legs, two hands. So, where are these 400 types of human species? But Prabhupada explains in many of his Bhagavatam purports that these 400,000 types of human species is in terms of the evolution of consciousness. So we see there are Vlechas, Yavanas, we see there are those, you know, people who live in the aboriginals or someone who live in the forest, who are not, you know, completely aware of the purpose of human form of life, who are just engaged in eating meat, killing animals. So Prabhupada is explaining about evolution of consciousness in terms of these 400,000 species. So we see even today, for example, this whole world is gripped by this coronavirus here. And you know, there are lockdowns being announced. In India, there has been a complete lockdown for 21 days. I was just yesterday speaking to my relatives in India. And one of my relatives is a dentist. And he was saying that is where it is actually spreading. Like dentists, clinics have been heavily, you know, asked to be closed down because of the, you know, directly eating into the mouth of the person. And this, you know, when they do that machine, that spray spreads outside when they are trying to clean while eating. So dentists have definitely been closed down. So people have to visit their dental clinic, whatever place they might have, for 21 days. So there's a complete lockdown in Australia. Also, we are hearing, in Victoria especially, we are hearing there might be a lockdown. On WhatsApp, we keep getting those scary messages, stock up your groceries, like especially for Gravastas, go and buy things, go and buy essentials, there's going to be a lockdown. So we are hearing these scary things. In fact, you know, somebody had gone to the city 2-3 days ago. So we have all started working from home. Since 2 weeks, everything, all of us have been sent home, we've been working from home. Very few offices are still open, but the city has become like a ghost town. People are saying there's nobody, no, you know, trams are empty, nothing is running in the city. The only crowd, you know, one person who visited the city was saying the only crowd that is there is outside liquor shops. So that is what we are seeing, you know, that is what Prabhupada means by the evolution of consciousness. Like, there is so much of fear which is there, but people are lining out of outside liquor shops because they don't know how to spend their time. You know, when they've been sent home, there's nothing much to do. Some people, like almost 90,000 Australians have lost their jobs over the last 1 week or 2 weeks. Because most of the airlines have closed down. There are no flights which are flying. So many people from Virgin Australia, like I heard 9,000 people were laid off from Virgin Australia. So people are losing their jobs. They're sitting at home. Obviously, there is a mode of panic, stress, anxiety which is there in the world as well. But this is what people are resorting to. There are queues outside liquor shops to buy liquor. Money is not there, obviously. They've lost their jobs. People are short of money. But still, you know, they are prioritizing spending whatever limited resources they have on liquor. Now, you know, yesterday only when devotee had come to our house and he was saying that St. Kilda Beach is, you know, really a mayhem. People are crowding in St. Kilda Beach just to enjoy it. One of my team members, you know, last weekend he had gone to Sorrento, the beach in Sorrento. And he was saying, oh, it must have been quiet, isn't it? And he said, no, it was pretty crowded. So people, like, in India we see videos, the police is actually able to enforce the lockdown. We see they, you know, they are able to hit with those lathis or those long sticks which police officers have. But here in the beaches, I was told the police are requesting, they are folding their hands and requesting people, can you all go home? But people aren't listening and the police are not able to do anything. Because obviously here, they will sue the police if somebody gives, you know, one danda to the person who is not listening. They will sue the police. So all those rights and rules and protection which citizens have, but they are working against their own self. Like there was one news report I was reading where it was said that if 90% of people stay quarantined for 3 months, then this will come down. 90% for 3 months. That is what is the current situation. And you know, in BBC News we were seeing in USA, 100,000 people have got this virus right now. So in USA is becoming second China. So much is spreading. So in Australia also it might happen because people aren't understanding. They are, you know, wanting to enjoy on the beach. So what Prabhupada is talking about in this purport, just wanting to enjoy their senses. And animals, Prabhupada is explaining in this purport that animals, like every animal usually has one strong sense by which he enjoys the senses. Like Prabhupada says pigeons and monkeys, they can have sex multiple times in a day. So that is their strong sense with which they enjoy. Like dogs have very strong sense of smell, for example, or you know, tigers and lions love to eat meat, so that is their sense which is developed. So usually animals, you know, at least are better in, from humans, better than humans in this particular aspect, that they only enjoy one particular sense which has been, you know, designed, ordained by nature for them or by Krishna for them, and they are actually exhausting their karmas. But in human form of life, because we have all these senses and so-called developed intelligence, we are utilizing these senses, all our senses, to enjoy everything. We want to eat nice things, unrestricted eating, like Prabhupada is saying, people want to do meat eating, people want to drink, the line queues outside liquor shops, even amongst all this pandemic that is there. We want to enjoy our eyes. We are seeing that, you know, internet, this load, NBN and Telstra, we were hearing that there is a big load on the internet right now because everyone is sitting at home. Obviously, working from home has increased, but also people are enjoying watching movies, free downloads are being offered. So everyone wants to enjoy their eyes by watching all these things, ears by listening to music. So only in the human form of life we want to enjoy all our senses. And we are misused. The entire human form of life is being misused. People are not utilizing their higher intelligence. Like we can see in this particular, Prabhupada says that the true test is when, you know, you are faced with a difficult situation. And when these humans are faced with these situations, we are seeing how they are utilizing their time. Going to the beaches, not doing the social distancing which government is saying, utilizing their senses to drink liquor, meat eating. Like I was told, there are no freezers left in Australia for people to buy. One of my colleagues was saying, and I said, why freezers of all the things? He said, because people have bought, you know, volumes and volumes of meat and they have stocked the meat in their freezers because they think that, oh, we don't know if we will get meat in the future and all that. So this is how, you know, the human beings are utilizing their senses and their human form of life. So only it is said, like we all know from Prabhupada, thankfully by reading Prabhupada's books, we all know that only by doing some bhakti unmukhi shukruti, one gets an opportunity to come into devotional life. One gets an opportunity to associate with devotees, to render some devotional service, to come to the temple, take darshan or hear about the Lord. That can only happen if someone has some bhakti unmukhi shukruti. And it is also described by Prabhupada that one gets this bhakti unmukhi shukruti by associating with a devotee. So either by associating with a devotee or accidentally serving a devotee. So for example, if someone has nothing, like, you know, all of, in our temple we have such nice harinams which all of you do so nicely in the city. So if someone has accidentally, you know, even danced or clapped, that is where their process of bhakti unmukhi shukruti is actually starting for them. Or someone has dug a well, you know, just they dug a well in a village, but some devotees came by and drank that water. So it was that person didn't dig the well to serve the devotees, but he has accidentally served the devotees like this. And that then that process of bhakti unmukhi shukruti starts for that particular person. So Prabhupada explains that only by associating with a Paramahamsa and also all his representatives, all his teachings, his books, does one come into the path of devotional service. So for all of us sitting over here, obviously for us that Paramahamsa devotee was Srila Prabhupada. So we might not have directly associated with Srila Prabhupada, but we got an association through his disciples or his grand disciples or the Harinams which were happening through the Harinam process that he started for us or books. So many devotees have come into Krishna consciousness just by coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada's books, like book distribution which, you know, is being done so nicely again in our temple. So only by coming in contact with these devotees do we get an opportunity to come out of the cycle of evolution, even in the human form of life. So all of us had this human form of life. Maybe we had it for a few births. We don't know what we were in our previous life. But the fact that we have got a chance to associate with devotees in this particular life, that means in our previous life something we might have done because of which we got this association in this particular lifetime. And it is giving us a chance to come out of even those 400,000 human species where some humans' consciousness is completely degraded. They are, you know, they are going to fall down into the lower species because the consciousness is completely degraded. So it is only by association of a pure devotee that one gets this opportunity to come out of the cycle of transmigration like Srila Prabhupada is explaining in the purport. And today it's the appearance of one such Paramahamsa, one such great devotee. It's the appearance of Ramanujacharya. So we will spend the next some time discussing about the life of Ramanujacharya. Prabhupada says that on the appearance day or disappearance day of an Acharya, it is very auspicious to discuss about their pastimes, their glories, And on that particular day, those devotees whose appearance or disappearance day it is, they are in a very merciful mood. So we also can invoke their blessings by discussing their pastimes and their glories. So Ramanujacharya, like, we know there are four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. And these four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas are, as we know, the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu or Narayan spoke this essence of Krishna consciousness or devotional service to four leading personalities in this existence, in this material world. The first personality is Brahma. So Lord Narayan imparted knowledge to Brahma. We know how, you know, when Brahma was sitting on top of the lotus flower, when creation happened, he was confused what he has to do. Mechanically tried to search the source of his creation by travelling down the stem of the lotus. But obviously, Prabhupada explains time and again, by mechanical means he can never attain Krishna. So he wasn't able to reach the end of the lotus stem and see who is the source of his creation. So went back on top of the lotus flower, got the message through tapa, and he did the tapa. And then he got darshan of Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu. And that's when, you know, the Vaishnava Sampradaya, Brahma was imparted with the knowledge of Vaishnavism. So Lord Narayan imparts to Brahma, he also imparts to Lakshmiji the knowledge of devotional service. And then there is also knowledge imparted to Rudra or Shiva and the four Kumaras. So for the four Kumaras, it is said that Ananta Shesh actually imparts the knowledge to the leader of the four Kumaras, and that is how Vaishnavism was spread by the four Kumaras. So these are the four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. And without receiving proper knowledge or without receiving instructions from one of these four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas, one cannot make progress in Vaishnavism. So we see in India especially, we see there are so many people who claim to be devotees. We see some, you know, we have in India when we had gone this time in February, Jagannath Mahaprabhu was invited to address a group. And that group was doing some kirtan, like we are called the Radha Sevika group or something like that. Now, you know, we have these spurious things happening. At least they are doing something, but they don't have any inkling of the four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas and being connected to those Sampradayas. In fact, Rupa Goswami explains in his teachings that unless one has taken either Siksha or Diksha in one of these four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas, he cannot actually understand the essence of Krishna consciousness, and he cannot be linked back to Godhead or going back to the spiritual world. So one has to take Siksha or Diksha within one of these four bona fide Sampradayas. But as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita in 4.2, Evam Parampara Praptir Imam Raja Shayo Vidhu Sa Kalena Mahata Yoga Nashta Parantapaha. So Krishna says that because of the force of time, these teachings have been lost to Arjuna. So we see some of these pure pristine teachings that Lord Krishna imparted to these great personalities, Brahma, Rudra, Shiva and Kumaras, they get lost. And then Krishna himself sends, you know, some powerful acharyas to re-establish his teachings which got lost. So we see in the Rudra Sampradaya, Lord Krishna sent Vishnu Swami. He came to re-establish the teachings of the Rudra Sampradaya because they were lost. And also down the line in Rudra Sampradaya, Vallabhacharya came. So this whole set, we see especially in Gujarat, even in Mumbai, it's a big thing. We see these Vallabhacharya, they have havelis. They are called as Pushtimar. Like they worship the Bal Gopal, the child form of Lord Krishna. It's very famous in Gujarat, Rajasthan and Mumbai also. So Vallabhacharya came to establish the pristine teachings of Lord Rudra Sampradaya. Before him, Vishnu Swami had come to establish. In terms of the Kumara Sampradaya, again the teachings had been lost, and therefore Nimbakacharya came to establish the re-establish the teachings of the Kumara Sampradaya. In the Brahma Sampradaya, we obviously know Madhavacharya came to re-establish the teachings, and then in this particular Kali Yuga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord himself came to spread the pure love of Krishna and to spread the teachings of the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. And then in the Lakshmi Sampradaya or the Shri Sampradaya, Ramanujacharya came to re-establish the teachings or to re-establish the Siddhanta of Vaishnavism. So, describing the birth of Ramanujacharya, so during, you know, before the Christian era 1000 BC, there was a very great saint called Yamunacharya. He was considered one of the greatest saints at that time in Bharatvarsha and especially in South India. He was tirelessly trying to preach the glories of Vaishnavism and tirelessly trying to establish the Siddhanta that Narayana or Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everyone should worship him. So he was one of the great saints, and he had a disciple, a sannyas disciple called Shailapurna. This Shailapurna was a very devout disciple of his guru, Yamunacharya. And Yamunacharya trusted him fully. He would serve his guru very nicely, like, you know, Prabhupada describes the guru-disciple relationship. And this Shailapurna had two sisters. So obviously, before he had taken sannyas, he wanted to execute all his responsibilities before he gives up household life and goes and starts, you know, serving his guru, completely surrendering his life to Lord Vishnu. So he had two sisters. They were called as Deeptimati and Kantimati. So he knew it was his responsibility. His parents are no longer there, so his responsibility was to get these sisters married off. So he gets them married off and, you know, conducts their marriage in a very nice way, and he gets Kantimati married to a person, a great devout devotee and a Brahmana, very highly learned Brahmana, called Asuri Keshavacharya, who was also known as Sarvakriti. So his fame was spread throughout South India, the Sarvakriti's fame, because he was very proficient in performing yajñas. That was his speciality. He was very good at performing yajñas. Very devout Brahmana and very good devotee of the Lord. So the only anxiety which Kantimati and Sarvakriti, or this Asuri Keshavacharya, had was they had no son. Despite many years of marriage, they had no son. So instead of, you know, resorting to some demigod worship and all that, they were great devotees of the Lord. So Sarvakriti knew exactly what to do. So he went to the temple of Parthasarathi. There was a famous temple of Parthasarathi on the banks of the ocean of present-day Chennai. There's a Parthasarathi temple there. So he went and he did a yajna to get a son, to invoke the blessings of Lord Vishnu. So he did a big yajna for many days. And at the end of the yajna, because of his devotion, Lord Narayan was so pleased that he appeared in a dream to him. And he told him that, "Don't worry, I will fulfill the desire of begetting a son. You go back, you and your wife go back." They used to live in a place called Bhutipur. So he said, "You'll go back to your place, native place, and very soon an Ansh will appear, of me will appear as your son." So he was so happy. Kantimati and Sarvakriti were so happy. So after a few months, Kantimati gave birth to a beautiful baby boy. And at the same time, her sister Deeptimati also gave birth to a very beautiful baby boy. And just looking at the symptoms of this baby boy whom Kantimati and Sarvakriti gave birth to, people were just getting so spellbound. Because that child had very divine appearance, and he had all the divine qualities which people had read about in the Shastras. They knew that a very empowered personality has appeared in the world. And when Shailapurna heard that, you know, the brother of these two sisters, he heard that his sisters have given birth and his nephews have been born, he decided to come, because that time Yamunacharya was living in Srirangam. So Shailapurna was serving his guru in Srirangam. So he decided to come to Bhutipur to give blessings to his nephews and bring the blessings of his guru as well for the two nephews that were born. So when he also comes and he sees this little boy which was born to Kantimati, he was also taken aback. He realized that this particular personality is a great personality. And he actually was thinking about, there was a prophecy which a great Alvar called Nama Alvar had done, Nama Alvar. He had done a great prophecy that very in the near future, there will be an Ansh, or there will be an Ansh of Lord Lakshman who will appear in this world. And that is what Shailapurna realized when you look at this child, that yes, this is none other than Lord Lakshman who has appeared again in this material world. So therefore he named this child as Ramanuja. Ramanuja means, Anuja means the follower of Lord Ram, because Lakshman was a devout follower of Lord Ram. So that is how Shailapurna gave his name to Ramanujacharya. He gave the name Ramanuja because he realized that this is the prophecy of Namalvar, that Lakshman will come back, had come true. And for Deeptimati Sanj, he was also, you know, very divine child, so he gave him the name Govinda. So these were the two brothers, two cousin brothers who were growing up together. And in the early life of Ramanujacharya, it's described that he actually got married at the age of 16. His father insisted that he should get married, he should settle down. So in his early childhood, he was showing all the divine symptoms of being a very great devotee. He was very detached from the material world, very learned scholar. Anything that he would hear or read once, he could completely memorize and remember whatever he had read and heard. So his father wanted him to settle down in Grahastha Ashram. So he got him married at 16 years of age, and his wife's name was Raksha Kambala. So after, soon after Ramanujacharya's marriage, his father passed away. And Ramanujacharya, along with his family, they moved actually to Kanchipuram, which was not far from the place where they lived. And after he moved to Kanchipuram, some of the elders over there, and you know, elder sannyasis who were over there, they advised Ramanujacharya that there is a very famous school which is run by a great scholar called Yadav Prakash. So they advised him that you need to further your education, you need to learn the Vedas, the Upanishads. So please go and join this Yadav Prakash school because he's a great scholar and a very learned pandit. So he actually went and joined that Yadav Prakash school. Now some background is given about Yadav Prakash. So Yadav Prakash was actually a disciple, a follower of Shankaracharya. So he was a devout follower of the monastic or Advaita philosophy of the Lord. And whenever he would speak, because Ramanujacharya was a born devotee, he was a great devotee, he is Lakshman. So whenever he would hear Yadav Prakash speak, his heart would be pained hearing of his monastic explanations. But he was extremely humble and gentle. So he would never speak up against his guru. He knew how he had to respect his guru. But his heart would always be under pain. So when he was living in this Kanchipuram, there was a great devotee of the name Kanchipurna. And Kanchipurna was actually a Shudra by birth. But he was a great devotee, and recognizing his great devotion, he was given the personal service of Varadaraj Perumal. So there is a famous temple of Varadaraj which is there in Kanchipuram. And Kanchipurna used to serve the Lord. So it is described that Kanchipurna was such a simple and nice, like very devout servant of the Lord, that Lord Varadaraj would directly talk. They would have conversations. So anybody who in that village of Kanchipuram who wanted some question answered from the Lord, they knew they had to go to Kanchipurna. They would say, "Oh Kanchipurna, can you please go and ask this particular thing from the Lord for us?" And the Lord would actually converse and give answers to Kanchipurna. He would, his famous service was fanning the Lord. And in summer month it is described, he would dip that fan into water, like scented water, and then he would fan the Lord very nicely so that the Lord gets cooling breezes. He would bring the best choicest foods and offer them to the Lord. So in this way he was just engaged in simple devotional service for Varadaraj Perumal. And Ramanujacharya had the great fortune that Kanchipurna used to always pass by his house. So Ramanujacharya sometimes would invite him home. He would have long conversations with Kanchipurna. But Kanchipurna was sort of trying to maintain a distance from Ramanujacharya because he knew Ramanujacharya was studying under an Advaita guru, Yadav Prakash. He knew he was taking teachings from a monastic guru. So when Ramanujacharya was there in this Yadav Prakash school, one day he was massaging the feet of his guru. And there was a disciple, another disciple of Yadav Prakash, who came to ask a question to Yadav Prakash. He said that in the Chandogya Upanishad, one of the shlokas explains that Lord Narayan's eyes are reddish in color. So can you give a further explanation on this? Now we have also heard, like, you know, there are so many verses which glorify the eyes of Lord Krishna, how they are a bit reddish like the lotus flower, like the red lotus flower. So the explanation which Yadavacharya gave, Yadav Prakash gave to his disciple was that, yes, that's true. My guru Shankaracharya has given an explanation on that verse. And over there he describes that Lord Narayan's eyes are reddish like the rare end of a monkey. Because we know monkeys and baboons, you know, their rare end is a bit reddish in color. And this is the explanation which Yadav Prakash gives to that disciple. And when Ramanujacharya hears this explanation, being the, you know, great devotee that he was, hot tears start flowing from his eyes. His heart was pained. And those tears fall on Yadav Prakash's feet, because he was massaging his feet at that time. And Yadav Prakash asks, "Why are you crying? What happened? That your tears are full of grief, they are very hot." So Ramanujacharya explains, he's saying that my heart is pained when I'm hearing this explanation, you know, of the supreme worship of the Lord Narayan. How can his eyes be compared to the rare end of a monkey? And that way, you know, he like implores Yadav Prakash not to do this blasphemy. He's saying, "I can't hear this blasphemy of Lord Narayan." So Yadav Prakash was very arrogant because he was a learned scholar. He was extremely arrogant. So he becomes very angry at Ramanujacharya. And he says that I am just repeating the words of my guru Shankaracharya, of the, you know, understanding that he has given of this verse. So why are you refuting or challenging that particular understanding? Do you have a better understanding than this to give an explanation to give? And Ramanujacharya actually gives a beautiful explanation. He says that Lord Narayan's eyes are reddish It's because they are always filled with tears, first of all, because of compassion for his devotees. And you know, he's always wanting to shower mercy on his devotees. So because his eyes are generally moist with tears, that's why his eyes are red. But also because his eyes are compared to the red lotus flower in the rising sun. So he said that is the comparison actually. The red lotus flower in the rising sun, how beautiful it appears because the sun is falling. It's a red lotus flower and the sun is falling on it, and how effulgent the lotus flower becomes. That is how the Lord's eyes are. So that is the comparison. And when Yadav Prakash hears this, he becomes extremely angry with Ramanujacharya because he feels that he is refuting or challenging Shankara philosophy. So that way, you know, there was now tension had started growing because Ramanujacharya would keep refuting the monistic philosophy which Yadav Prakash used to preach in the school which Ramanujacharya used to attend, and that tension was continuously growing. In fact, there was also one incident which happened, that there was a king who used to live in that particular kingdom, the king of Kanchipuram, the greater state in which Kanchipuram was there. And that particular king's daughter for some time was possessed by a ghost. And that ghost had gone into the daughter and he was making her do all sorts of nonsense things. She had obviously, her complete behavior had gone out of control because the ghost was completely controlling her from within. So the king heard that Yadav Prakash is very good at, you know, Yadav Prakash had that particular talent or skill of getting a ghost out of a person. So he was first invited. And he does all his, you know, those whatever mantras and tantras and all that he chanted to get that ghost out of the girl. But the ghost speaks loudly from within the girl and he says to Yadav Prakash, he's saying that you are following this monistic philosophy, this Advaita philosophy, and you are trying with, you know, all those methods to get me out. But I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not at all impressed by what are you doing. I will come out of this girl only on one condition. If you invite your disciple Ramanujacharya over here, because he's a great devotee of the Lord, he's very simple and humble at heart. So only if he comes over here, I will go out of this girl. So then Yadav Prakash had no choice because the ghost had announced in public for him to do that. So he had no choice. Although there was tension growing between him and Ramanujacharya, he had to invite Ramanujacharya over there. So when Ramanujacharya came, he just prayed to Lord Narayan. In front of the ghost, he sat down and he prayed to Lord Narayan. He prayed that, "Oh Lord Narayan, this girl has been possessed by this ghost. Please shower your mercy and take this ghost out. And, you know, give the ghost also liberation and, you know, make the girl also free from this influence the ghost is having on her." So when he started praying loudly like that, so when the ghost heard this, the ghost said that, "Okay, I'm ready to come out because I'm very pleased by all the sincerity and seriousness that you've shown in praying to Lord Narayan, but only on one condition, that you put your feet on my head." So on my head means on the girl's head. So Ramanujacharya says, "Yes, I will do that, but are you promising me that you will leave this girl then?" And the ghost said, "Yes, I promise you." And then Ramanujacharya has further proof. He said that, "Not just promise, how will I come to know that you left this girl? Because you might just become quiet for a few days and then you might again erupt inside the girl." So the ghost says, "Okay, see, we are all sitting under this banyan tree. And as soon as you put your head on my, your lotus feet on my head, I will leave the girl and the tallest branch of the banyan tree will crack and fall down. So that will be the proof that I've left." And that is what it happened. Ramanujacharya placed his lotus feet on the girl. He blessed the ghost and the girl. And the ghost immediately left the girl's body. And at that same moment, this branch fell down. So again, you know, this made Yadav Prakash even more envious of his disciple. That, you know, his fame and glory is spreading all over the world. And, you know, Yadav Prakash's fame and glory was going down because Ramanujacharya was able to refute and defeat his guru. So on another occasion again, when Yadav Prakash was explaining some monistic philosophy, Ramanujacharya in front of everybody defeated his guru by, you know, establishing pure Vaishnava Siddhanta and that, you know, the Vishishta Advaita philosophy which Ramanujacharya had come to expound. He completely refuted and defeated his guru. And that particular point was like the highest point of humiliation for Yadav Prakash. So he decided, he called some of his very close disciples who were his chelas and who were also, you know, following the monistic philosophy, and he invited them, he asked them that, "Look, this is what is going on. This Ramanujacharya's fame is spreading all over the three worlds and my fame is going down, and plus he's keeping on refuting. He's actually blaspheming his guru, he's blaspheming Shankara's pure teachings. So what should we now do with this Ramanujacharya? So some of the disciples said, oh, let's expel him. We'll just take him, drive him out of your school, guru. And Yadavgana says, but if I expel him, he might go and start another school. And obviously, already the fame has spread, so people will throng to his school and no one will come to our school there. So then they were pondering what to do, and then Yadav Prakash and the disciples decided that it is best that we kill Ramanujacharya. So see, you know, this is the plot. Just because of envy and his fame going down, this is what how Yadav Prakash's mind has become, even though he was a transcendentalist. Because whatever it is, he was following some monistic philosophy, but fear and envy had gripped his mind. So he says, what I will do is, let's take a pilgrimage to Ganga. We'll go on a pilgrimage to some of the holy places. And to travel to Ganga from south, it will take many, many months. So, and then when we go over there, in one of the forests, we will kill Ramanujacharya. And we'll come back and tell in Kanchipuram. No one will suspect and we'll say that, oh, he died. Some wild animal must have killed him in the forest. So that way he decided to kill Ramanujacharya. The whole plot was put into place. And then he announced to his students that we are going to go on a pilgrimage. So everyone was so jubilant. Even Ramanujacharya was happy that he'll be able to go and see some holy places. He'll be able to take darshan of Mother Ganga. So he and his cousin brother Govinda, who was also part of that school, they all left with Yadav Prakash. So they all traveled for many months. And one of the nights, they were in a very remote forest. They were camping over there. And that time Yadav Prakash called his disciples. Ramanujacharya had gone to the forest to collect some fruits and berries and all that. And Yadav Prakash called his disciples and said that this is a very opportune time. I think this is a good time. We can go into the forest, kill Ramanujacharya, leave his body there. And when we go back, we'll tell that he died because of animal killing or whatever. And Govinda, the cousin brother of Ramanujacharya, thankfully happened to be there. And he overheard this whole plot which Yadav Prakash was doing with his disciples. So he quickly ran to Ramanujacharya into the forest and he told him that this is what they are doing. So you please run away immediately from here, otherwise they are plotting tonight to kill you. So Ramanujacharya, hearing this, he started running, and for days and days and days he kept running through the forest. Now he was hardly 18 years old at that time, so he wasn't very old. And he was getting lost in the forest, he couldn't see the end of the forest. So while he was running like this, trying to escape and trying to save his life, at this end, Yadav Prakash had sent his disciples, his followers to see, but nobody could find Ramanujacharya. And for days and days he didn't return. So they actually concluded that, good, we did not have to kill him. Some animal has killed him, looks like, and he's dead. And externally they all showed grief, oh, Ramanujacharya is gone, because Govinda was there with them. But Govinda just kept quiet and they continued on their pilgrimage. So at this end Ramanujacharya was running for days and days, but he was still not finding the way back to his hometown, which was Kanchipuram. So then he prayed to Lord Narayan. He said that I'm lost in this jungle, I don't know the way out, I've been going around in circles I think, but you please help me and show me a way out of this forest. And at that time he saw far away, there was a hunter going, traveling through the forest with his wife. So he approaches the hunter and he tells him that I have lost my way, I'm trying to go to the city of Kanchipuram, can you all please help me? And the hunter said that my wife and I kill birds, that is our profession, and we know it's a very sinful activity. So we are going to Rameshwaram and Kanchipuram to pray to the Lord and to purify ourselves, to get rid of all the sins. So yes, we can definitely take you. You please start traveling with us. We will guide you back to Kanchipuram. So he starts traveling with his hunter and his wife. And for days and days they keep walking. And then, the hunter's wife becomes very thirsty one of the days. So she tells him that there is a well not far away from here. Can you please get me some water? So Ramanujacharya goes and gets water for the hunter's wife. And the hunter's wife drinks that water and she says, I'm still thirsty. So he keeps going back and forth. He keeps drinking so much water that the hunter's wife's thirst is not quenched only. And then he again goes to bring water from the well. And then when he comes back, he suddenly sees the hunter and his wife have disappeared. And he feels, oh, where have they gone? Where have they gone? What happened? And then he sits down near the well and he's wailing that these people have gone. Now how will I find the way? But in the distance he suddenly sees, rising temples, big temples. He sees the domes of some temples. So he asks, there is a passerby going that way, and he asks the passerby He says that I was on my way to Kanchipuram and had lost my way, but can you please now tell me where is Kanchipuram? And the passerby is a little surprised. He says that here, these temples and these domes which you are seeing is Kanchipuram. You have arrived at the outskirts of Kanchipuram and I know who you are. You are Ramanujacharya, the famous disciple of Yadav Prakash. So everyone is waiting, please come back. Come back to your hometown. And at that time, realization dawns on Ramanujacharya that actually the hunter and his wife were none other than Lakshmi and Narayan who had come to help him. They had come because he had prayed so intensely to Lord Narayan, they had come to help him out of the calamity that he was facing of being lost in the forest. So he actually cries in ecstasy, he's crying that the Lord actually came and helped him personally. And in that mood, he goes back to his hometown. He reaches into Kanchipuram and he goes and meets his mother. And he tells his mother and his wife what was the plot of Yadav Prakash and how he had tried to kill him. So everyone was relieved to see him, and Yadav Prakash comes to see him as well. And externally he shows joy. He sees that, oh, thank goodness you have returned. We thought you had been killed by some animals and all that. But obviously internally he was very upset that this is what had happened, and he is now, you know, alive. He is back alive and his plot did not succeed. So Ramanujacharya then, you know, decided that it's better he leaves the school. So he stops going to the school. And then he goes, approaches Kanchipuram, because he knew Kanchipuram was always hesitant to associate with him because of his association with Yadav Prakash, who was a Mayavadi. So now he goes and falls at the feet of Kanchipuram. And he tells Kanchipuram that, look, I have left the school of Yadav Prakash. I have stopped associating with him. Can you please give me initiation and accept me as your disciple? I have a great desire to serve you. So Kanchipuram was very humble and he was a Shudra by birth. So he tells Ramanujacharya, and every occasion that Ramanujacharya would approach him, he would keep telling him, how can I do that? You are a very highly learned Brahmana. You are born in such a high Brahmin caste and I'm a Shudra by nature. I'm just a simple person, just serving Lord Varadaraj, doing some simple services, but I am not at all qualified to give you initiation. You should go and take initiation from someone who is very qualified, who is also a highly learned Brahmanarya like yourself. So Ramanujacharya actually told him, he said that if my Brahmin birth is coming in the way of accepting you as my guru, because for Vaishnavism there is nothing called Shudra, there is nothing called Shudra, Brahmana, Vaishya, all these castes and creeds and ashrams and all these is not there. Vaishnavism is beyond all these divisions. So he said, if my Brahmin birth is coming in the way of me accepting you as a guru, then to hell with my Brahmin birth. It would have been better I would have taken birth as a Shudra, which would have then allowed me to accept you as my guru. So I am not seeing any distinction. Why are you seeing this distinction? He was imploring Kanchipuram like that. But Kanchipuram, being the humble person he was, he refused. He kept refusing Ramanujacharya to give initiation. And then Kanchipuram went and spoke to Lord Varadaraj. He told Lord Varadaraj that this, you know, Ramanujacharya is such an ardent devotee of yours. How can I give him initiation? But he is keeping on begging me. So please give me the permission. I want to leave Kanchipuram and go and serve your form in Balaji for some time. And Varadaraj actually gives him the blessing. He says, okay, you go and serve my form in Balaji for some time and then you come back when your heart is satisfied. So Kanchipuram actually leaves that place and goes away. And in the meantime, Yamunacharya, like whom we spoke about in the beginning of the class, who was the greatest devotee and who was the greatest acharya at that time present on the planet, he was very old and he was about to leave his body. So he actually wanted, because he had heard about the glories of Ramanujacharya, and you know it takes one to recognize one, he says. So he could recognize that Ramanujacharya is going to be the next acharya of Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. So he actually sends one of his disciples that you please go and fetch Ramanujacharya and come, because I want to meet him once and I want to give him some instructions before I leave my body. So the disciple travels to Kanchipuram, but in the meantime Yamunacharya actually leaves his body. So he was not able to have darshan, or in fact Ramanujacharya was not able to have darshan of Yamunacharya before he left his body. So the disciples of Yamunacharya started making grand arrangements for the funeral of Yamunacharya, for the, you know, the samadhi creation of Yamunacharya, and they started making all elaborate preparations because he was such a great acharya. So in the meantime, this disciple and Ramanujacharya arrived over there in Sri Rangam, and Ramanujacharya comes to know that Yamunacharya has already left his body. So he is very crestfallen, he is very heartbroken, And he thinks that I lost the opportunity to associate with such a great exalted Vaishnava. So he's crying in grief over there. And everybody, whoever were the disciples of Yamunacharya, they saw Ramanujacharya for the first time. And they were also shocked to see his divine quality. They were all feeling from within that this is going to be the next Acharya of Sri Sampradaya. So Ramanujacharya comes to pay his last homages to Yamunacharya. And he observes that Yamunacharya's three fingers are tightly closed. So he asks the disciples, he said that, was it always like that? Would he always keep his three fingers closed? That is how normally Yamunacharya would stay, like his hand would be. And the disciples observed and they said, no, this is quite strange that he has kept his fingers closed like this. So Ramanujacharya understood that Yamunacharya wants him to execute some mission, unfulfilled mission of his. So then he goes near the body of Yamunacharya and he opens, like he says that I'm taking three vows today. And he says the first vow I'm taking for my guru Yamunacharya is that I will spread the message of pure devotional service to Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan. I will spread this message of Vaikuntha Bhakti all over the world through my own example and through my words. And I promise I will spread this and I promise that I will bring loads and loads of people into the process of bhakti. So as soon as Ramanujacharya makes that vow, the first finger of Yamunacharya opens. And people were shocked that this was happening. He was already, you know, he had already passed away some time ago, but the finger opened. Then Ramanujacharya continues. He says that the second vow I take is that I will write a Vaishnava commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, and which will be called as Sri Bhashya. And I will write this commentary because my guru's mission was to establish Vaishnavism. So I will write this commentary which will refute Advaita philosophy, which will refute Mayavad philosophy, where they say that the Lord is an illusion and all that. So I will firmly establish through this commentary called Sri Bhashya, which I will write on the Vedanta Sutra, I will firmly refute the Mayavad philosophy of Shankaracharya. So as soon as he makes the second vow, the second finger of Yamunacharya opens. And then Ramanujacharya says, he says that with deep gratitude and an act of saying thank you to the great Parashara Muni, who was the father of Vyasadeva, and who, because of whom Vyasadeva came into the world and he wrote all these, you know, obviously all the Vedas, Bhagavatam, everything has been written by Vyasadeva. So he said, as a matter of gratitude, I will name one of my disciples after this great Parashara Muni. I will name him as Parashara Das. And as soon as he makes this third vow or promise, the third finger of Yamunacharya opens. And everyone was ecstatic when they see this happen, this miracle happen. And they realize that actually Yamunacharya has empowered Ramanujacharya to carry on his lineage. So although Yamunacharya had come and he had also established, he was a great devotee and an acharya, these were the three missions which he couldn't fulfill in his lifetime. He didn't have enough time because he was taking care of, you know, spreading in Sri Lanka, he was taking care of spreading Krishna, or like Vaishnava Bhakti, Vishnu Bhakti. So these are the three unfulfilled missions he had, and people realized that Ramanujacharya is the one now who is going to carry forth the mission of Yamunacharya. So after that, the whole, you know, cremation, everything happens of Yamunacharya, and then Ramanujacharya was going to leave Kanchipuram. So at that time, he was going to leave Sri Rangam. So everybody invites him and tells him that why don't you now make this your base town? Because Yamunacharya has empowered you to become the next Acharya. And will you not take darshan of Ranganath Swami before you leave? And Ramanujacharya says, he says that I am so sinful that I could not even get darshan of my guru. He left this world before I could take darshan. And there is one more saint who is not ready to initiate me. So I am very sinful at heart, that is why this is happening. So I have to go back, purify myself, and then I will come over here. So then he goes back to Kanchipuram, and by that time Kanchipurna had returned back to Kanchipuram, because Balaji spoke to Kanchipurna when he was serving him. He said that in my form as Vardaraj, your service was to fan me with cooling scented waters. Right now no one is doing that and I am feeling very hot. So please go back, Balaji is saying to him, please go back and serve me in my form as Vardaraj once again. So Kanchipurna returns back to Kanchipuram. And Ramanujacharya actually again falls at his feet and he tells him, please give me initiation. So he actually invites him home. He realizes that Kanchipurna is not agreeing, but he knew the potency of, you know, accepting the remnants of a devotee. So he said, let me invite him home for prasad. And once he takes prasad, I will accept his remnants. That way all my sins will be purified. And then maybe Kanchi Purna will accept me as his disciple, because my sins have got purified. So he invites, and he tells his wife that I have invited this great saint. So make an elaborate feast for him. And his wife was quite, you know, devoted to Ramanujacharya. She was very obedient to him. Although she was herself not a great devotee, but she was very obedient to him. So she prepares a nice feast for Kanchi Purna. And then Ramanujacharya, once the feast is ready, Ramanujacharya goes to bring Kanchi Purna to his house. So Kanchi Purna in the meantime has realized, because he was also a realized saint, so he realized what Ramanujacharya was trying to do by inviting him home for prasad. He realized that he is actually trying to take my remnants, and then he will again beg me for initiation. So Kanchi Purna in the meantime goes to another path and reaches the house of Ramanujacharya while Ramanujacharya is not there. So he tells Ramanujacharya's wife, Raksha Kambala, he says that please give me, serve me prasad quickly, because I have to go back to my service to Vardaraj Parimal. And his wife says, Raksha Kambala says that let Ramanujacharya come, he is actually gone to call you. And he says, no, I have to rush back. If you want, you give me now, otherwise I will go. So then obviously she realizes he is in a hurry, so she serves him. Very lovingly she serves him all the prasad that she had cooked. And once he had taken all the prasad, he quickly, like he washed his plate also and drank. And then he leaves from there quickly before Ramanujacharya could come back. And then Ramanujacharya comes back and he says, I couldn't find Kanchi Purna. And he saw his wife was cleaning up and all. He said, you are already cleaning up, what happened? So she said, while you were gone, Kanchi Purna came and took prasad and he was in a hurry, so he left. So Ramanujacharya says that, oh, but have you kept his remnants? That was the main purpose of inviting him. So his wife says that, no, he is a Shudra, how can he accept his remnants? So I threw his plate away. And Ramanujacharya was so angry with his wife, because she was still making those distinctions based on birth, that we are high caste Brahmins, he was a Shudra, how can we accept his remnants? So although very obedient and docile and subservient to Ramanujacharya, she didn't have this high realization of bhakti. So then Ramanujacharya goes to Kanchi Purna and he begs for initiation. And this time Kanchi Purna says that I have already spoken to Varadaraj. And Varadaraj has told me that there is a very great disciple of Yamunacharya who is going to come soon, and he will become your initiating spiritual master. So you just wait for him and I will still be a Siksha Guru, but you take initiation from him. And actually true to his words, after some time, there is a great disciple of Yamunacharya called Mahapurna who came. And Mahapurna was actually sent, because as soon as Yamunacharya left and Ramanujacharya did not agree to stay in Sri Rangam, his disciples, Yamunacharya's disciples, started observing that, you know, the great power which Yamunacharya was carrying and the preaching that he was doing for Vaishnavism, that had gone. So people were, you know, becoming very complacent in their bhakti. Like we hear, every time an Acharya leaves, there will be a turmoil for a little bit of time. So that is what was going on in Sri Rangam. People were becoming slack, they were becoming complacent. No one was doing bhakti like they were doing when Yamunacharya was present. So all the disciples realized that it is time now for another Acharya to come and take Yamunacharya's place. So they actually request Mahapurna. They said, because he was the leading disciple of Yamunacharya, so they request him, you go and fetch Ramanujacharya and come. So Mahapurna was very happy to do that particular service, because he knew of the glories of Ramanujacharya. So he and his wife travel together and they reach Ramanujacharya's house in Kanchi Puran. And Ramanujacharya was so happy to receive Mahapurna and his wife. So he divides his house into half, like two halves, and in one half he and his wife are staying, and he gave the other half to Mahapurna and his wife to stay. And very lovingly he started serving him, and he actually took initiation, following the instructions of Varadaraj Parimal and Kanchi Purna, he took initiation also from Mahapurna. So Mahapurna and his wife were living there, they were serving very nicely, they were instructing Ramanujacharya to come back to Sri Rangam. And then one day when Mahapurna's wife was filling water from the well, and Ramanujacharya's wife had also gone there, some water from her pot, from Mahapurna's wife's pot, fell into Ramanujacharya's wife, like Raksha Kambala's wife's pot. And she became very angry, because she still had the division of, you know, Shudra and Brahmin. So Mahapurna was also a Shudra by birth, even though he was a great devotee. So she became very angry with Mahapurna's wife. And she said, what have you done? You have spoiled all the water that I had collected, because water from your pot has fallen into my pot. So although, you know, my husband has accepted initiation from you, That does not mean that we forget the fact that you are Shudra by birth. And now see what has happened, I'll have to again fill water, like she really gave her a thrashing. And Mahapurna Sahib was taken aback. She is actually Guru Mata, but she is getting this thrashing from the disciple's wife. So she was crying uncontrollably, and Mahapurna asked her, "What happened? Why are you crying?" And she described the whole incident. So Mahapurna realized, he said that this is an indication of Lord Narayan, that we should now go back, we have to leave this place, we should not live here any longer. So they actually start going back, and then Ramanujacharya wasn't there during that time. So when he comes back, he realizes what his wife has done, and he was grief stricken that his guru had to leave in, you know, such a sad state of mind, and she actually did this Vaishnava Aparad, great Vaishnava Aparad. So Ramanujacharya realized that he actually now wants to go to Sri Rangam and start preaching Vishishta Advaita philosophy that he had come to preach. But he knew he had to take sannyas before that. So he somehow tricks a Brahmin into going to Ramanujacharya's wife and asking for alms. And the Brahmin goes and tells that, "I've got this letter, I've come from your father's village and I've got this letter from your father." So he tricks his Rakshakambala. And Rakshakambala sees that letter and she's very happy. And she shows it to Ramanujacharya, like the letter was written by Ramanujacharya only to trick her. But she shows and says, "Oh my father is calling me back to stay with him for some days." So Ramanujacharya happy dispatches her, yeah, go and stay with your father for some days and come. And he utilizes that opportunity to take sannyas and cut off his ties with his wife. So he actually goes to the bank of the holy river which was there in Kanchipuram. And he goes and begs Kanchipurna, and this time Kanchipurna agrees to give him sannyas. So he puts on orange robes, takes an orange cloth and creates the three danda, wraps it around the danda, and then Kanchipurna initiates him. He gives him the sannyas name of Yati Raj. That was Ramanujacharya's sannyas name. So once he got this, then he actually went back to Sri Rangam. Went to Sri Rangam and to Yamunacharya's place, and he started preaching the pure philosophy of Vishishta Advaitam. So this is the whole life of Ramanujacharya. There are many more stories, like his, you know, there are some pastimes about his disciple Kuresh, who actually got his eyes burned because he did not want his guru to get any harm done by an envious king. But just speaking about the philosophy of Ramanujacharya, so the philosophy he came to expound was called as Vishishta Advaita philosophy. And this particular philosophy was mainly, so we know how the Lord came as Lord Buddha. So he came as Lord Buddha, he actually, animal killing was rampant, so he actually told people that there are no Vedas, don't believe in all these Vedas, and there is nothing but voidism. So Lord Buddha came and established this Buddhist voidist philosophy. And after that, people were had completely stopped following Vedas and Upanishads and all that. So then, we know the Lord sent Lord Shiva as Shankaracharya to re-establish the position of the Vedas. But in doing so, he actually established what is called as Mayavad philosophy. Because again, that instruction was given by Lord Krishna, by Vishnu to Lord Shiva, that you establish a philosophical sect which will keep all the impure people away from the pure Vaishnava philosophical sect or tradition. So the main purpose why Shankaracharya established this whole Mayavad philosophy was to keep people away from the pure path of bhakti and only attract the people who were ready, whose hearts are purified to the pure path of bhakti. So Shankaracharya came and established the Advaita or the monistic philosophy or Mayavad philosophy, and then Lakshman came as Ramanujacharya to re-establish what was already lost, to re-establish the pure sect of Vaishnavism. So that was the purpose of Ramanujacharya. His main purpose, he was an extremely powerful acharya, and with his strong, the Govinda, the Sri Bhashya commentary which he wrote on the Vedanta Sutra. So one more thing which is very unique about Ramanujacharya was he never wrote a commentary on the Bhagavatam. So he accepted it and he believed in it, but he never wrote a commentary on that. And the main reason which acharyas explained was that because the Vedas, you know, Shankaracharya was establishing his Mayavad philosophy based on Vedas, Upanishads and all that. So therefore Ramanujacharya was always preaching strongly from Vedas and Upanishads and Vedanta Sutras. He was always preaching strongly from that, refuting the Mayavad philosophy, because he knew people will accept that more. If he speaks about pure Bhagavatam, people wouldn't be ready to accept. So that therefore he wrote the Sri Bhashya commentary and all that. And then later on, after a few hundred years, Madhavacharya came. So Madhavacharya did not refute Ramanujacharya's philosophy, but he just took it further and he established what is called as the Dvaita philosophy. And then we had Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the Brahma, he started the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya, and he established the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So Prabhupada explains that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually synthesized all the sampradayas, and he gave us the pure teachings of, pure teachings of all the four sampradayas in the Achintya Bheda Bheda philosophy that he established. So, in that way we should consider ourselves very fortunate that we are somehow associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is none other than Krishna himself, and who has synthesized all the four sampradayas and given us the pristine teaching called the love of Radharani and Krishna that he came to spread. So one of the great contributions of Ramanujacharya, in establishing the Vishishta Advaita philosophy, was actually firmly establishing the teachings of the Alvars. So the Alvars are great devotees. They were all there in South India. They were great devotees of the Lord. And he came and established their pure teachings because they were all Vaishnavas. So strong Vaishnavism based on the Alvars teachings. That is what Ramanujacharya's contribution was while establishing the Vishishta Advaita philosophy. So we'll stop over here. It's almost 9 o'clock. And if there's any questions or comments or anyone has anything to add about Ramanujacharya.
What is the Vishishta Advaita philosophy?
From what I understood by reading, while I was reading about Ramanujacharya, was Vishishta Advaita philosophy. So in the Advaita philosophy, Shankaracharya says that there is no difference. Like you and God are one, and everything is illusion. Even this material world is nitya. That is all an illusion, and you are also one with God. So that is Advaita philosophy, non-duality. And then Vishishta Advaita philosophy, from what I understood, Prabhuji, was there are three principles. There is chit, that means that the soul is separate, he is a part and parcel of the Lord. Then there is sat. Sat means there is eternality, there is a spiritual world and a material world, and that is true, it's not false, this material world and spiritual world. So that is sat. And the third thing was Ishvara. So Ishvara means there is a completely separate Ishvara. So the Jiva and the Ishvara are separate, and the Jiva has come into this sat, this material world, which is also eternal, which keeps going, gets destroyed, keeps going on, to then realize his position and worship Ishvara. So that is what I have understood about Vishishta. You would like to add it? Any other questions or comments? So he came in the Shri Sampradaya or Lakshmi Sampradaya. So that is a bona fide Vaishnava Sampradaya, but the teachings were lost over a period of time. So Ramanujacharya came, and plus Shankaracharya had came and spread Mayavad philosophy or Advaita philosophy. So Ramanujacharya came to re-establish Vaishnavism, and then this philosophy was called as Vishishta Advaita. Because his main purpose was to refute Shankaracharya's Mayavad philosophy. So he was firmly establishing that there is Jiva, which is Chit, and there is also Ishvara, which is the Lord. And then there is this Sat, the material world and the spiritual world. So that is the philosophy expounded, yes.
Yes.
So Vishishta Advaita philosophy, Dvaita philosophy, and Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took, like I was explaining, he took the essence of all the Vaishnava Sampradaya. So, and all the Vaishnava Sampradayas always propagate or propound that the Jiva is separate, he is a servant of the Lord, Ishvara is separate. So there is very fine lines of differences between these philosophies. That's right. We'll stop the class here. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.